Hey everyone, thanks so much for tuning into the podcast. Today is an exciting one because we have Tech Dweeb. So I'm going to hand over to Tech Dweeb to introduce himself and we'll get into the podcast.
Hello everyone. Hi, how you doing? I'm Tech Dweeb. Welcome. Thanks for clicking on the video today. Thanks for clicking on Aiden's video today, I mean. Aiden, thank you for doing this. I've been really excited for this.
Yes, me too. Yeah, I've enjoyed your videos and I'm really keen to talk to you.
Yeah. So, starting off, who are you? What do you do on YouTube, Aiden?
I'm a tech reviewer. I review retro games and retro handhelds mostly. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. I don't really know a ton about what you do, so this will be a good chance to get to know you. okay, speaking great. Of which, the first question that I always ask anyone I'm trying to get to know, do you play Dungeons & Dragons?
I do not. Actually, that is a terrible question to ask me because I'm an activist against board games.
An activist. Oh my goodness. Okay, that's I've never heard of such a thing.
That's extreme. But actually, I went to a board game evening last night and I thoroughly enjoyed it. So I am slowly being converted. So who knows?
All right. Yeah. Oh, interesting. Okay. Well, yeah. I guess there's got to be some overlap between us. There's like a Venn diagram, right, where there's you and me, and there's the little part. Dungeons & Dragons is not there. Okay. The next thing that I'd like to ask is, what's your favorite Tech Dweeb video?
I'm actually glad you're asking that because I really enjoyed your one about, you didn't say you have ADHD, but how, you know, dealing with that kind of thing. And it actually meant a lot to me. I enjoyed that video a lot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 Maybe we could talk more about that in a bit. I just have a few more questions for you.
Well, it would be nice if I could ask you a few questions since this podcast is actually supposed to be about you.
it's supposed to be about... I thought I was interviewing you for my show.
No, this is going on my channel, unfortunately.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah. Is that okay?
Yeah, you know, you've been in touch with my mom, so I guess there's something lost in translation there. Oh, that makes total sense now, actually. You know, before this, she was trying to give me advice. She's like, you know, be polite, don't overshare, all this stuff. And I'm like, Bob, it doesn't matter. I could, you know, edit it or whatever, but okay. All right. Yes. Well, that's actually A-okay with me. That takes some of the pressure off, I guess. I don't have to think of clever questions. All right. Hang on. Yeah.
Well, hopefully my questions are clever enough.
All right. Well, I had all these questions figured out, but yeah, maybe we could do another interview where I interview you or something someday.
It would be great. Definitely. Right. I'm actually, funny enough, even when you were asking those questions, I got very, very nervous. So clearly I enjoy being on the other side of this.
All right. Well, I could talk about myself all day. So this is a good match then.
Okay, it's a good match, yeah. Yeah. Okay, so I hope we haven't started on a bad foot because I honestly haven't tried D&D, but I just really struggle with board games and struggle to enjoy them. But I played a game called Hidden Hitler last night, which has an interesting name.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
Have you heard of it?
Yeah, it's sort of like, what is it, like Werewolf or whatever, where one person is like the bad guy, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And it draws a little bit off. It's very loosely based on the time of Hitler, but basically it's just a very well thought out game where there's three fascists, there's Hitler, and then the rest are liberals. And you've got to try and lie to each other and vote the fascists out, or the fascists try to get rid of the liberals.
Oh, that's fun. So that reminds me of a game I like a lot called, Avalon. It's a play on the resistance, and it's like King Arthur thing, and you know, you're the Knights of the Round, but one of you is like the traitor for the Morgantha or whatever. It sounds like a similar kind of thing.
Okay, cool. Yeah, and I actually really enjoyed it, so I'm 1 foot closer to being a possible D&D fan.
All right. Well, a D&D is not like most board games, but yeah, we could talk. So. We could talk about yes. that. Don't get me started on D&D. Trust me.
Huge fan. Okay, cool. Well, yeah, maybe anyone interested in talking to TechDweep about that, hit us up in the comments. He has a Discord. You do have a Discord, don't you?
Oh, I do. Yes, 750 members strong.
Wow. I started this week and I have 40.
Yeah, well, you've
but it's
got
great.
More,
it's a great community.
You've got more at your stage in the Discord life than I did at your stage. That's for sure. It took me forever to start getting people to join.
My trick was to invite all the retro gaming celebrities like yourself, and then that seemed to help.
Ah, okay. That's a good technique. Where the creators go, their followers follow them like their flock of sheep.
Yeah, but Discord is a great place to connect with fans. And actually, I mean, I'm not really following my script, but that's something that I've really appreciated about your sort of YouTube strategy is how you engage with your fans on Discord. So how did Discord get going?
Oh, well, I mean, starting off Discord, it was like I had one guy who just wouldn't let it go. I didn't want to do it. And he
one
just,
fan.
Yeah, this, he just kept, you know, he's like, you just got to do it. You got to do it. It's going to be great. Mm. And I just didn't want to have another thing to deal with. I'm just trying to make videos here.
Admin.
So
yeah,
but I did it. I made a Discord. He was I think he's like my first member. And oh man, I am so glad I did. The Discord is, it's like your YouTube comments are mostly going to be people that watch your videos, right? Occasionally you'll get the odd straggler in there who just, you know, being negative or just weird or doesn't understand, you know, your niche or whatever, just found you through the algorithm. But most of the time that you're talking in your YouTube comments, it's your fans, right? Well, like having a Discord server is as if all your best fans that love to talk to you and hear your opinion on their opinions, if all of those fans just joined a chat room and you could just chat with the best people in your community. And I love it so much. I love hanging out
there. That's really nice.
Yeah, we do fun stuff in my server. We do like a question of the day and that gets a lot of engagement. And in the Patreon only private room, we do a retro game of the month club. We call it the Dusty Game Society, where we all play the same game.
I must join for that. Cool.
Yeah, it's sort of like a book club, but for retro games.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, lots of, you know, they do that in the official Retro Handhelds Discord server, and you don't have to pay for it, so you can do it there. But it's a little something that I like to do.
Well, I can say as a outside spectator that if anyone's watching and they want to do something like that, TechDweeb is probably one of the best game recommenders out there. Like I saw you posted a video, because I've also wanted to do that, where I recommend games to people, and I just thoroughly loved your video. It was, you know, you commented on one of my videos saying that I'm really good at just kind of speaking off the cuff, and I'm sure that video was planned or whatever, but it really felt like just a TechDweeb talking about a few games that he really loved, and I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, that's one thing that doesn't really happen a lot in our niche. You know, we tend to focus on the tech a lot.
Yeah,
and when it comes to the games, we just talk about the performance. But like we're all here because we're gamers, right? Like we love these old games, and that's why we got, you don't make a tech channel and make hundreds of videos if you're not into games, right? So
exactly.
And what's crazy is like so many different people have completely different like gaming experiences, right?
Yeah.
You know, like I know what one game that we have in common, Aiden, you and I, is Darkwing Duck. And
I know this. Yes.
Yeah, that game never really gets much love. Not many people talk about it, but it's a rock star in my past.
And not a lot of people know about it. I was talking to Stubbs the other day, and he had never heard of it. And then Russ from Retro Game Corps also. He just said he's played a few Disney games, but he never got into Darkwing Duck. And it's strange because it was an affordable game back in the day. And I just
was it?
It?
Maybe that's why I had it, because we didn't have a lot of money when I was growing
we
up.
We were cheap ass.
Yeah. I was genuinely super duper into Darkwing Duck, though. I freaking loved Darkwing Duck. I quit my paper route so that I could watch Darkwing Duck because it was at the same time.
Yeah, I suppose I was a fan of the show. We had in South Africa every Sunday at like 6 p.m. they would play about 2 hours of Disney. And like every South African kid that my age has a memory of that, because it was just, you know, the parents are having dinner and we would sit and watch Darkwing Duck and
all those
shows.
Yeah, and lots of time. I talked about this in one of my recent videos about how, like, when I think of the games that I loved, like, really, rarely are the games themselves the thing that I remember. You know, I remember loving Darkwing Duck. But I don't remember like any specific levels or boss fights or gameplay moments. I just remember like the sensory memories around it. I can picture the situation I was in when I was playing it. Sensory memories are like that. So if I fire up Darkwing Duck, and just hearing that intro music, I'm taken back. I can feel the shag carpet of my of our house underneath me, sitting on the floor of the living room. I can feel the warm light of my turtle tank beside me as I'm playing. You know, maybe there's a fire going in the stove. We live in North Ontario. There's always a fire going.
Wow.
Maybe mom is boiling some water for tea. I could see the fake wood paneling of our 80s living room.
Yeah. I've seen that in so many North American things, the wood paneling.
Oh yeah, that was the thing in the 80s and 90s. We all had that, I guess, especially in North Ontario.
Yeah, mine is similar, except a lot warmer.
Yeah,
there were no fires going.
Yeah, so actually, I wanted to ask you this. This was on my list of questions. I hope you don't mind if we're deviating too far.
That's cool.
So I want to get a feel. I don't know anything about South Africa. So how far south are you, and does it actually get cold there ever?
Well, South Africa is pretty diverse in terms of just like the landscape. So we are South Africa. We're the southern part of Africa. So if you look at Africa, right at the bottom, there's South Africa. And we have a mountain range. So up on the mountain range in the north of South Africa, it snows. And where I am, it's a coastal town, and it's pretty moderate. So we have, our temperature fluctuates from 20 to 30 throughout the year. That's it. We don't have much more of a fluctuation in temperature than that.
Really? That's as low as it gets is like 20 during the day?
Yeah. I would say... I'm lying. In the winter, it can get pretty cold. I'd say the coldest it was this year was about 5 degrees.
The coldest? Oh. Is that like overnight, like at the very, very coldest?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, which we don't experience it. We just cover ourselves in blankets, but it gets.
I have a friend who moved to Australia. And it's a lot more arid there. He's not like in the southernest part of Australia, but he's not in the north of Australia. So he's about as far from the equator as he was when he lived here in Canada. But they don't have like a heater in their house. They don't need one. If it gets cold, they just put on sweaters. But he says that he feels colder there because...
Insulation.
Yeah, they don't do anything about the cold. Like in Canada, when it gets cold, we're like, all right, hibernation time, and we all turn up the heat and we've been collecting our firewood for the winter, and we're ready to hunker down.
Yeah, we don't have that at all. Although Australia is a lot warmer than here. I visited Perth and like Perth goes up to 40 degrees regularly, whereas here that's an anomaly. We have some really hot parts of South Africa, but where I'm living, we had a heater in the winter, but we maybe used it for 2 months and that was it.
All right. Huh. Interesting. Yeah. Oh, okay. Thank you for I hear Africa and I just picture like, you know, like jungles and savannas, but I'm sure it's a lot more diverse. It's a big place.
Yeah, I need to fact check what I just said, because I think I'm wrong on many of those things. But yeah, it's pretty diverse. It's really nice in that we have like forests, we have deserts, we have a lot of coastline, a lot of surfing. Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Surfing. That's definitely something we do not have here in Canada. Although I'm sure there are people who surf here. There's got to be.
Crazy people.
A bunch of weirdos.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, I heard this for surfing in England, and I was like, you people are insane. My wife visited Ireland, and she went to this one restaurant called The Happy Pear. And, I mean, Ireland is flipping cold compared to South Africa. I mean, probably not as cold as where you are, but it's really cold. And they get up in the mornings and jump in the ocean. And it's like minus 10 degree water. I don't know, maybe that's a bit ridiculous, but it is very cold.
Oh, no, thank you. I don't like, I do not like being cold.
the irony.
Yeah,
I've been cold.
I mean,
I'm living in Canada.
It's a thing. I like being out in the cold. I don't like being like stuck inside all winter. So I actually do like winter camping and stuff just cause to get out into nature, force myself outside of my house. I don't like, maybe this is oversharing, but, my hands get super cold. I have very poor circulation in my hands for some reason, and I could never keep these little things warm. So no matter how thick my gloves are, I can't keep my fingers warm. So my whole, like I'll go winter camping and my whole body will be completely those fingers and there's nothing I could do.
Must drive you nuts. Yeah. Well, I heard because some friends of mine emigrated to Canada years and years ago and like they live in, I think, Alberta, which is, I think it's pretty rough out there. Like it's cold and I think it's in interior, isn't it?
Alberta has mountains, so they get lots of weird weather that I don't get here in Ontario.
Yeah. And they say they were surprised at how outdoorsy Canadians are.
Oh, really? I think Alberta has a reputation as kind of being more outdoorsy than lots of other.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to the things that we actually plan to talk about. I love these tangents. I want to actually quickly ask you about the little matching Tech Dweeb hat. Did someone make that for you specifically for the channel?
Oh, you'll never guess. My mom made that for me.
For real?
Yeah.
Oh, that's
cool. This is a.
Does he have a name?
This is a friendship monster. I just call him Little Dweeb.
Little Dweeb.
Yeah. So you can. This is a crochet pattern. You could find it for free online. If you search Friendship Monster Ravelry, you'll find the pattern for this. And
cool.
One of my subscribers, actually, Crystal, lovely girl, she got me onto this. I was watching she does Twitch, and I was watching one of her live streams, and she had that. And I was like, oh, what's that little thing? She's like, oh, it's a friendship monster. Look it up. And I did, and I immediately went to my mom. I was like, Mom, you need to make this for me. And then she came up with the hat. She made a matching hat. And I'm sorry if it's distracting, but it's sort of like a little comfort thing for me. It lives on my desk. And whenever I need to fidget, instead of just kind of like sitting there fidgeting like an addict or something, I could just kind of squeeze this little guy. And it just kind of feels good. It's a fidget toy for me.
Okay, so, cool. No, I dig it. I think it's so cute.
Yeah. Yeah. He looks great on camera too. So it's a double whammy.
Yeah. It's a precursor to the face reveal. You know, the inevitable Tech Dweeb face reveal.
Yeah, there you go. You want to know what I look like there?
There
I look
go.
Like the human version of this guy. Oh, God. That's terrifying.
That's scary. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. With a little bit of stubble under there.
Yes.
And really thick glasses.
So, okay. So YouTube. You are a YouTuber, and there must have been something you were doing before this. Can you give us a little bit of a background?
So right now, YouTube, I don't know that I call it like, you know, my job, because it doesn't make a lot of money for me right now. So I guess, but I spend all my time doing it. I'm treating it yeah. as if it's a job. So I don't really have a job now. Many people, like my uncle, would say that I'm quote unquote unemployed, but I like to just say that I'm exploring new career paths. I've had a job. I've had several jobs over the years. I'm 40 now, so obviously I've tried to find the perfect job for me. I've done lots of boring jobs, but my favorite job was I've told this story on my channel before. When I used to sell popcorn at movie theaters. It's a kind of a fun story. That was a great job because I got to see lots of free movies. It wasn't like an official job. I was kind of an entrepreneur, so to speak. What I do is I'd go to a movie and I'd have a baby carriage, but the baby wasn't actually a real baby. It was just a doll. And under the doll, the carriage was filled with delicious buttery popcorn. And the diaper bag was full of ice cold root beer. And I'd go up to the people in line buying their food and I'd whisper, "Hey, don't pay full price for that expensive popcorn. I have popcorn right here and it's only a dollar." And usually they'd say, "What? You're selling your own popcorn at a movie theater? That's pathetic. Get out of my face, loser." But some people would buy my popcorn. I didn't make much money selling the popcorn. Usually it was just barely enough to pay for the ticket into the theater, but I got to see free some good movies. Okay. I kept doing that job for a whole summer until I got caught in the movie theater. People called the police and they called my mom. She took away my computer for a whole month. So I had
that sounds about right.
That job. You know, for real, I've done quite a few other jobs. I worked at a computer company for a while, for a few years.
I started an unknown computer company that no one's ever heard of.
Yeah, yeah. The only thing I'll say about their computers is that their computers are really good, but their software sucks and I hate them. I started there as a frontline tech support representative, and I was actually really good at that. I liked doing it too, and it taught me lots of computer skills. After doing that for a while, I kind of moved up a little and I was like a senior tech support guy. And then they put me into an office, which was, you know, an office room all by myself. And that was super boring. And I wasn't on the phones anymore. Yeah. And the chair sucked. I got a pressure ulcer on my butt. So, I quit that job. And yeah, now I've kind of, I cobbled a career together out of various side gigs.
Yeah.
So like, you know, when you go to a restaurant and they don't have anything you want to eat, so you kind of piece yourself a meal together out of side dishes. You ever do that?
You know, you're like,
I'll have a baked potato and some steamed broccoli and some onion rings. And like,
We have a restaurant called Spur in South Africa. And I did that a lot when I was a kid.
Yeah, yeah, maybe some soup or something. You know, you get four sides, and I think it's funner to do that than just to get the pasta or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's sort of how I view my.
That's your career.
That's my career. So I also do art. I went to school for art.
You're good with graphics.
Yeah, yeah. I still do art and animation, kind of on the side. That was my main job for a while. I've done some books and I can do live caricatures. That's one thing I do.
Wow.
I might show some of that off someday.
Yeah, that's a little hidden skill. Oh.
Yeah, maybe I'll do you someday, Aiden, if you ask me nicely.
Yes, we should do that. The next podcast, the entertainment on the screen can be you caricaturing me while we podcast. That'll be fun.
Oh, that's a good idea. Oh, that's a great idea, actually. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I do animations. I also do some game stuff. So I have a a secret side gig that I can't tell you about, but there's a game project.
I see. Okay, that's exciting.
Yeah. I can't tell you because it's got my name all over it, and then you'd know who I am. But I've been doing this for 10 years now, and it's a project that's done with a very popular game, hint, hint. And I still work on that, and that still makes me money. But that's sort of the kind of thing where I've shifted my focus to YouTube. I want to do YouTube. I'm having so much fun with this.
Yeah.
I'm making a bit of money. It's not enough to just do YouTube, but it's getting more and more as the time goes on. That's the dream, though, is that I'd be able to just do YouTube, because it's sort of my dream is to just do YouTube because it's just so fun. I love the tech. I love talking about games. I love playing games. I've played with tech. So we'll get there someday if I stick with it. That's the hope. I think, what was it in your interview with Russ, where he said that he gave it 5 years. Was that in your interview that I heard that?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He said he was going to give it 5 years, and if it doesn't work, then he'll go back to the army or whatever he did.
Yes.
But it did work for him. So I don't know if that's like a magic number or whatever, 5 years, you know, you got to devote 5 years of your life to trying a thing and to know if it's like your thing or not. No, that feels about right. My interests, I think it might be an ADHD thing, but I get bored of doing the same thing all the time. And I can't see that happening with YouTube. Because if I get bored of it, I could just do different stuff, right? It's infinite.
The thing with YouTube is it's always evolving. I'm constantly thinking, okay, once this niche kind of trickles down, what am I going to do next? Which is, it's for most people, that would stress them out, because if I build a career on YouTube and then suddenly everything changes, for me, that's exciting because my whole life has been built around that. I love change. I've had so many jobs because I either get fired or quit. So YouTube is the perfect thing for somebody like us where our brains are constantly moving to the next thing.
Yeah. You know, so many of the influencers or the content creators that I follow, I don't follow them because of the stuff that they talk about. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's how I found them.
Yeah.
But like I follow these guys because I like the guys, right? Yeah. I like their voice. I like the comforting feel when I pull up a video and I just hear them talk about something. I think lots of viewers are like that. Lots of subscribers, at least.
Yes.
Where they just they tune in to hang out with their buddy, you know, their buddy Tech Dweeb or their buddy Aiden or their buddy Russ or whoever it is. And just hear them talk about stuff.
Yeah,
it's kind of a unique thing. This YouTube, it's funny how it started as, you know, when YouTube just started, when it first came on, it was like a website of videos just made by regular people, like
cat videos,
but it's by you, and it's crazy how it's actually still that. Like, there is lots of highly polished commercial stuff on here, but for the most part, like, most of the stuff that you're watching, think about it, it's not this highly produced stuff. It's just regular people doing their thing.
Yeah, because my theory, or part of, because I'm always building like this little algorithm in my head of what works on YouTube, and there was a while where I thought production level was very important. So let's say I have the top five things. And for me, number two was production. But, you know, there are competing creators on YouTube. Their production level's not as high as others, but they're doing better than those people. So I think with your channel, you've tapped into both. Your production level is high, but you've tapped into that, like you say, the whole buddy idea. Like, I'm just a buddy who's into tech. I'm just a fellow nerd doing nerdy things. Come and join me, you know? And I think that's one of the secrets.
Yeah. Yeah. I've had, you probably have too, lots of comments from people reaching out to like talk about their life and like they want your advice on their, what to do with their girlfriend or their family situation or that they're feeling.
I haven't had that.
Whatever. Oh, really? Oh, you will. Maybe it's a side effect of having a Discord. So maybe that's in your near future. We'll see about that.
Mm, yeah.
Lots of people that they reach out and they want my advice as if like I'm their friend. And that's the most flattering thing in the world.
I'm
able to make stuff that they want to hang out with. That makes me feel good as a person that that somebody wants to be my friend based on the stuff they've seen, the nonsense that I do. They want to just, you know, talk to me as if I'm their friend. And I guess that's what one of the best parts about the internet is that you can do these things.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a big overwhelming factor for me getting into this was just the camaraderie. I really love that.
Yeah, yeah. It's not something that I thought I would like, but before I started making content, it's not something I ever did. You know, I never reached out to creators or tried to put myself on their radar or ask them questions or whatever. I've done it a few times now, and it does feel good. It feels very good when you ask a question and they answer. When the creator answers you, you're like, "Oh, he answered my question," or whatever. It's kind of silly to think that people would ever be like thrilled or whatever that I answered their question. But I do get it very often, where even when somebody's negative, somebody leaves some sort of a negative comment. And I reply to it politely and I address their concerns. And then their response is like, thank you so much for replying to my comment. I didn't know you read these or something. Yeah.
Yes.
Because
sometimes they've just given into that sort of, they give into that sort of anonymity. And I've fallen prey to that, where I say something and I actually regret it online, because you just kind of fall into this anonymous trap. And same story. I'll respond to the person and just be polite and just go, or make a joke or say, yeah, unfortunately, this device doesn't do that. But, you know, it also does this, this, and this. And I hope you enjoyed the video. And then suddenly their whole tune changes, because they're so excited that this guy on YouTube that they perceived as some big YouTuber just responded, you know?
Yeah, yeah. That's one of the benefits of being small on YouTube is that it's within your bandwidth to read all your comments and reply to them. I've reached a size and a comment volume that I cannot reply to all the comments anymore. And that was actually kind of a bummer for me when I realized, like, I'll post a video and then I love reading the comments in the first couple hours, and I would always reply to all the comments. And now some videos I post there, they accelerate so fast that I can't keep up. I would just be there all day replying to comments, literally all day long, if I replied to everything. So I read all my comments, but it's crazy to think, like, you know, whatever, I have this many subscribers. When I have 10 times that many subscribers, like Russ or something, Retro Game Core, surely he doesn't even have time to read all his comments. There's so much comments, right? So it's kind of one of the special things about being a small channel is that you can actually keep on top of all that and be available to your audience.
Yeah, I'm excited for the time where I can dedicate most of my time to it, because right now I run a business as well and it makes it tricky, but I'm about to hit 10,000 subscribers, and at the very same time, my income also made a little jump, and it's kind of just this symbolic thing that's made my wife realize that this is actually like a thing, you know. And I've forgotten what I was going to say, but
when you start making money on YouTube, it can become a thing of, you consider if I'm making this much with this many subscribers, when I have 10 times this many subscribers, will I make 10 times the money? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't actually know how it works. I'm very, this whole YouTube channel that I'm doing is, I take it seriously, and I put a lot of thought and effort into my content and the direction of my channel.
Yes.
But it's also kind of a fascinating experiment for me. I'm curious to see how all my predictions play out, and you know, all the all the subscriber predictions that you know, websites, they predict when you're going to get certain amounts of subscribers. I like the data side of things. So
yeah, I love it too. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. You know, ask me in like 5 years, and I'll have a completely different, outlook on it, I'm sure. But yeah, it kind of feels that way, that your success accelerates linearly with your subscriber count. It's kind of held true so far. But yeah, we'll see. Well, I'm not sure. Maybe it'll plateau or something. Well. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think the trick there is, because like when we talk about income, the income is heavily based on the amount of views you get. And so speaking to someone like Russ, and he was, because I said to him, because I actually stopped watching his videos because I was so scared of copying him, because he's so, like, was such a big influence in the beginning. And then I checked in again, and it was about 12 months later, and I couldn't believe how much he had grown. And I said to him, wow, your stats are so high, you must be seeing exponential growth. And he said his views are actually petering off. So he's, it's not that he's plateauing. I mean, he shared some of his stats with me the other day, and it's mind boggling compared to what I'm doing. But his views are slowing down, which also means his income is slowing down, because his income is heavily based on those views, you know? So it's interesting. But I think I'd be pretty happy with 400,000 subscribers.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I there's no doubt in my mind that eventually he'll reach a million. Like, it's got to happen. Like, he's the niche of retro games isn't going away. It's only going to grow because we have we have generations and generations of people who want to play the games that they played when they were kids. You know, it's so maybe
it's only going to just keep doing this.
Yeah. Maybe in 10 years, everybody's going to want to play their old, the Call of Duties on the Xbox 360 that they played when they were a kid, or whatever the games are. But people want that nostalgia. They want to recapture that, the carefree days of their youth, and go back and play their old favorite games and discover new ones. And, the popularity of, retro style indie games is very hopeful for me, that even the 16-bit and the 8-bit era games are not going anywhere. Because if you look at like the PC top charts of for indie games, they're staggering. There's so many people buy games like you know, Sea of Stars, Vampire Survivors, like retro style games that are made in an old art style and an old design philosophy with modern updated mechanics, obviously. But just like the popularity that stuff is still popular, not just with old people like you and me, but like with kids, you know, with on the Switches and stuff. The fact that those are so popular kind of makes me feel like this is something I've been kind of percolating in my brain. Sorry if you want to go on to other topics. Just feel free to.
No, I'm interested in this. I want to talk about this.
Yeah. So the term retro game, lots of people try to lock it down to a certain era.
Yeah, like polarize it.
Yeah, yeah. So where it's everything below GameCube, that's a retro game, or a certain year, everything before that year.
Yeah.
But I think of it more as a style of game. Retro games, like when somebody says retro games to you, probably a feeling or an image of a style of game pops into your mind. And that's what a retro game, that's what people want when they play retro games. They want to play their old favorite games, but they want games that feel like this. And that's why new games like Sea of Stars feel like retro games. And I kind of think about it. I think I saw this. Somebody wrote something about this. This isn't my my interpretation, but it works really well. I can't remember where I heard it. Somebody said, it's like indie music. At the start, indie music was a thing, right? It was, you know, like independent bands without a label or a producer or whatever, just making music. And eventually, all that kind of music combined together into a style of music. And now, when people want indie music, they don't necessarily want independent bands making music without a record label
in the garage.
They want that sound. They want the they want the indie music's vibe. That's the music they want, is indie music. They don't. So retro gaming kind of feels that way to me, where people want retro games.
That's
want
a very
the
good
feeling.
Point.
Yeah, they want the feeling of retro games. So yeah, I don't know if that's going to fade away or whatever. But the fact that when I started out, I was the same. I worried that, this is going to level off, and, you know, where all the 40-year-old, dudes are going to get their retro handhelds and they're not going to be interested anymore. But the fact
and
that
our channels are done.
It's gone so far. Like, we're getting so many freaking handhelds every single week. There's a new thing, and now Ambernic has their new Arc thing, and it's crazy how fast it's going. Like, I was worried I was jumping on at the end, and I was barely getting started.
Too.
Like this, So, I don't think it's going anywhere. People are gonna want to play these games freaking forever, and as more and more. You probably noticed that it's like in real life, it's kind of baffling whenever you meet someone who's into old games and you show them a retro handheld, you know, and they're like, what? Yeah. It has all the old games on it. That's crazy. And it's, you know, for people
and
like
they don't
us,
know
where
to
like,
start. Their brains just freak.
Yeah. And for people like us, we're like, yeah, of course it has all the games. Come on, it's a retro handheld. What do you expect?
Yeah.
But the fact that most people don't even know that these things exist, you know? You probably know people who think, if I want to play Asteroids on the arcade, I got to go find an arcade machine with Asteroids on it. They don't even know that they could just play it on their computer or their smartphone or whatever.
Yeah. No, you're 100% correct. But I think you've cottoned onto a very interesting point. So, because my worry, and probably this is what you were referring to, is, for example, we are reaching the point where these devices can nearly, we're about two generations of devices away where it can just fluidly play Switch. But for me, that's where Nintendo are going to step in and start suing everyone. And so I feel like there is a definite cap on that side in terms of the hardware and performance and all that kind of thing. But the other point you're making is there's just so much movement in the market. There are games that are going to be created that are in a retro style that are really good and that are going to bring back the sort of retro feeling. What do you think I'm right in saying that there's a cap, you know?
Yeah, there probably is, but I think you're giving Nintendo too much credit. They don't have as much power as lots of people worry about, I think. Because, I mean, the Switch emulation, the only things it works on is Android devices. And Nintendo isn't going to be able to take away Android devices. I mean, it's... If anything, I think the future of Nintendo's... lawyery style is gonna be in DRM. They're going to pack their games full of DRM. You know, we've already heard that Denuvo is offered their anti-cheat or their DRM anti-piracy software for any Switch game. And that could make it a lot harder to decrypt and make available the software for us to emulate. It's going to happen, though. I mean, the community, the community never sleeps. Nintendo's got lawyers, but we've got all of them, the nerdy determination of the coders who are like, oh, you're going to tell us not to do something? Well, let's form a team and do everything we can to figure out how to do it and give it to everybody for free.
Yeah.
So it's frustrating, Nintendo. You know, like, how cool would it be if, because Nintendo's, I've said this lots of times on my channel, Nintendo's a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde company. You know, there's two sides where they make amazing hardware, cheap, that's affordable, that, you know, parents can buy for their kids and give them the gift of video games. Family-friendly games. Some of the best freaking games in the world. Man. Mm. How cool is it that they give us Zelda, Mario Wonder, like all the, so good. They're just a gift to humanity. But at the same time, they have their lawyers. And they do really silly anti-consumer things too.
Mm.
How cool would it be if like, Nintendo... gave you access to the games, you know, like if you bought Mario Wonder and Nintendo was like, oh, you own Mario Wonder. Okay. You got the cartridge, do what you want with it. You play it on your smartphone. Sure. Some company made an emulator. You bought the game, you have your license key, whatever. They could do something like that. Yeah. Or like if you bought the game, it's kind of like, how cool would that be? Mm. Like, they're cool in so many ways and crappy in other ways.
Like a sort of app store type thing that crosses my mind often. You know, something to the way Apple went, that they with the way they revolutionized everything with the app store. There's something to be done in that area in retro gaming. I'm sure of it.
Yeah. I don't think they ever actually will do that. Lawyers being lawyers, they would hate that. The lawyers would. We've seen lots of stuff from companies of you know, employees when they leave the company, they'll speak out and say, "Oh yeah, you know, I was trying to, you know, loosen up these restrictions for you guys, but the lawyers always said no," or whatever. All sorts of stories like that. So yeah, The community is going to do everything we can, but maybe we will reach a point. The frustrating part of Nintendo is that their games are only available on Nintendo. Like something like PlayStation, Horizon Zero Dawn came to the PC, Spider-Man came to the PC. Like the games become multi-platform eventually, and at some point you need a PC to be able to play them. Like, you're not going to be playing God of War on your smartphone. Come on now. The new God of War, you know what I'm talking about.
I'm with you. I got into this with Russ, and I posed the question to him, you know, what does he think the future is, Linux, Android, or Windows? Because I have this sort of belief that even though Windows is frustrating as heck, it's kind of the future, or a company like Steam or something like that is the future. What do you think?
Yeah. What I would want is for Steam to be the future, because Steam does a lot right. They're the good guys in my books, in this space. Because of their attitudes towards it. You know, Gabe Newell famously said, the way to curb piracy isn't by, I'm going to get the quote messed up, isn't by putting anti-piracy measures in place. It's by giving your customers a service that's better than they're getting from the pirates. So that's what Steam did. I can easily download the latest and greatest games, like Skull Island, Rise of Kong. I could easily download that amazing game, but why would I do that when I could buy it on Steam? And then I have my cloud saves, I get all the updates, I can and support the developers and, you know, all that good stuff. I think people want to, they want to own stuff. That's what it comes down to. They want to buy their games and have their games that are theirs. And that's why one of the reasons.
Because What I was going to say was, because I don't think we're ever going to go back to, although, I mean, Nintendo's still doing it with the Switch, but we're never going to go back to cartridges and, you know, consoles with cartridges and that kind of thing, which is the nostalgia we all miss. But having Steam and buying Steam games kind of has a little bit of that feeling, that satisfaction of buying a thing, like you say, supporting the developer, and now I own it, you know? And I really like that about what they're doing.
Yeah, lots of consoles have tried this too. Obviously, like, you know, you can buy games on the Xbox or the PlayStation, but there's always that concern that someday those games you bought aren't going to work on the latest hardware. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean,
Steam isn't like that. You could buy all your games on Steam and you could play them on every computer ever, forever. Right?
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, that's why I feel like it's...
Yeah.
Well, okay, because, I mean, Steam is technically on their handheld is Linux. I keep saying Linux, but it's Linux. But, you know, it works well on Windows, and that's why I love the Windows handheld scene, and I'm quite keen to get into it, but...
Yeah. Russ, he really hit the nail on the head with the fact that... it's kind of a tricky minefield because we don't have Windows on ARM in any real way. We don't have Windows needs to run on x86 handhelds.
Yeah.
You know, we have really good ones, but the battery thing is just a monster that's almost insurmountable right now.
Yeah.
Because you know, those chips are so powerful, but they're not designed for mobile efficiency. I mean, they are. But x86 architecture in general is not anywhere near the efficiency of mobile chips, ARM-based chips. Running Windows games on an ARM chip is an amazing thing that would, you know, you'd be able to play your Steam games on your Odin 2 or whatever, your high-end smartphone.
That'd be crazy.
And I wouldn't, I think that's where the future is for that stuff. We're not there yet. We're not near it yet. But I think we will get there eventually when there's enough money to be made. Valve did this. They did this with getting Windows games on Linux. You know.
Yes, that was a huge breakthrough. Yeah.
They built it on the work of other people. I shouldn't give all the credit, obviously, but like they deck in a real way. The Proton stuff. And we're in the very early days of emulating Windows games on phones. This is something you can do now. Can you imagine if Valve resources to work there and had a account and play your PC games on your phone? Through whatever magic they need to do, the same way they did it for it would baffle me if that isn't in the works already.
There's so much movement in this little market of ours.
Then we wouldn't need to worry about x86 processors getting more efficient because we have the ARM chips already that are super efficient and super powerful. And if we could just emulate those Windows run times and dependencies and all that stuff on your Android device, the same way we're, you know, doing it on Linux, that's where the future is right there. And then we don't need PS3 emulation. The Odin 2, because there's already one for Windows and you can just run that on the thing. It would streamline. We wouldn't need to develop these. We could just emulate the hardware the same way we're already doing on the Steam Deck with Linux and Windows games.
Yes.
That's my dream right there, and that's my prediction, I guess.
Because, cool
like
dream.
I said, it would baffle me if that isn't already in the works. It is obviously you can already emulate Windows games on phones. I think I saw somebody emulating Shadow of the Tomb Raider on their phone. It wasn't running great, but wow. Early days, right? Like early days like early days of Windows emulation on Linux was pretty pathetic compared to where it is now. So as a proof of concept, it's no doubt in my mind. That's the way we got to go.
Yeah, I mean, you're way more insightful in those areas. So I really dig that. That's cool. All right. So, I mean, you've been doing this for a while. How long have you been doing YouTube for?
Oh, I don't know. I could look it up. Maybe 2 years.
2 years.
Yeah. I could look it up for you if you want. I feel like it's been about 2 years. No, that's cool.
I think that feels about right. Maybe just over. And
I have about 250 videos.
Wow. You see, like I said, someone wanted to start a YouTube channel and I said to them, okay, make 100 videos and improve with every video. And then you will get no views. And then after that, we can start talking.
It's rough. Yeah, it took freaking forever to get views. Yeah, I started in September 2021. Yeah. So it's been just over 2 years.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah.
Yeah. Starting is just getting started. I mean, you've got to do, like, if you want to make YouTube videos, the worst reason to make YouTube videos is to make lots of money, because then you're just going to be worrying about your subscriber count and you're going to be beating yourself up. Mm. Why don't I have more subscribers yet? I put so much work in. Why aren't I making any money? Why is it taking so long?
Yeah.
Don't do it if you don't love doing it. If you're not doing it just for the fun of making videos and for having people watch them, there's no point in even starting. Mm. Like, you're not going to.
Yeah.
Maybe there are YouTubers out there who just found success. They set out to make lots of money and they did. But that's just, it's such an external motivator. And I don't know. I don't even, like, would you even want that? Like, if you to do a job you didn't love and just because it made lots of money? I'm sure lots of people would, but I certainly wouldn't.
Okay, so I want to talk about that because, you know, I mean, a lot of guys say, you know, don't get into this for the money and the views, which is a good starting place. But then also here's my little journey into Tech Dweeb. When I first saw your channel, I thought to myself, what the F is this guy doing? You know, I saw
common sentiment, I think.
like a fairly, fairly visceral reaction to what you were doing, thinking to myself, you know, here I am being very serious, being very earnest, and here's this guy with a stripy t-shirt waving his hands about and talking about tech, you know. And then obviously, like a lot of people who watch your channel, come back for the second one, and then they start to see, oh, this is like a thing, this is like a show that's being put on. And from my perspective, because I, you know, like I say, I'm always developing this little algorithm in my head. What works? What doesn't work? Why is that guy who's making seemingly worse videos than me doing better than me or whatever? Like, I'm always trying to figure those things out. And I felt like there was very strong strategy coming behind what you were doing. From your side, what was strategy and what was just pure passion to do this for the love of it?
Yeah. It's hard to say, I think. I love being goofy. Whatever I do in life, I have to find it fun. I can't ever do anything that's boring to me. I've left jobs that paid very well just because I was bored, and their life is too short, right?
Yeah, you're done with that.
So
yeah.
I guess the concept for my channel, it's kind of evolved. I mean, I'm a tech dweeb, right? Through and through. I've always been a tech dweeb. I love gadgets and gizmos. When I started my channel, at the time, I was really into refurbishing PCs, buying new parts and sprucing up PCs. And I was just also kind of getting back into emulation and retro handhelds. I had a few of those and I thought, oh, maybe I could show these off on a tech channel or whatever. So
yeah,
that was like my my original idea. I was like, since I'm buying all this stuff and playing with it and I do have opinions on it, why not share it? I like tinkering away and but why not make some videos about it? But I didn't know what I wanted to do when I first started making videos. I didn't was going to do some sort of a theme or what. But I like being goofy. I like acting. I've always been kind of an improv guy. Back in high school, I was always in the drama class, always putting on dumb plays. I like being the center of attention. So I just wanted to make a video. Almost as a test. I bought the Super Console X Pro, and I'm sitting there with this thing on my desk. And I'm getting ready to open it, and I'm thinking, why not just make this a video? I've been thinking about making videos anyway, so I did it. I just made a video. I opened it and I talked about it as I was exploring it. Turned it on for the first time on camera. The video is terrible. I just recorded it with my cell phone. Please don't go watch it. It's not a good video. But that was it.
I think I've watched it. It's not that bad. Yeah.
That was it. Like I made a video and all of a sudden I was a YouTuber. Like I was immediately a YouTuber and I immediately was just like, this is what I do now.
I'm in.
Yeah. So it's kind of, so I guess, yeah, it's a hobby, making the videos, but I take it seriously. I don't know if the direction of my channel will change. It has changed. The direction of my channel has changed over the last couple of years.
Yes.
What's funny, pretty early on in my channel, not pretty early on, I had a few hundred subscribers. Maybe I had 1,000 at this point, actually. I did a poll and I asked what kind of videos people want to see. Do you want to see more PC focused videos, more retro videos, more, fun stuff and skits or whatever? And the overwhelming majority wanted more PC content. And then I did another poll recently, the same poll. I did it like a couple weeks ago. And overwhelmingly, people want more retro stuff. So it's sort of like...
Yes, interesting. Yeah,
my audience has changed. My content has changed. And I'm all for it. Like, I don't mind at all that the PC stuff is on the back burner. I'll always be a PC gamer at heart. But the retro stuff is changing so fast and it's so interesting that I love where that type of content is going, and it's super fun to make. I love retro game. I can just play. There's 40 years worth of content there in retro games to make videos about, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I love the angle that you bring to this community. And what people don't know is this is the second time we're recording this, because the first time we had an argument and you left, but...
Yeah, sorry about that. I promise I'll behave myself this time.
Yeah, yeah. But I actually asked the question in that interview, are you going to keep doing a mix of content, or are you knuckling down on retro gaming? And now, that was 2 weeks ago, and that's been the change. So there's already a shift.
Well, I'm still going to keep, I should be clear. Mm-hmm. I'm still going to keep doing PC content because I am a PC gamer at heart. I do have a gaming PC. I like building PCs. I'm still going to always do PC content.
Yes.
It's just my audience has spoken. They want more retro content, which is A-okay with me. There will always be a side of PC. There has to be a side of PC stuff with emulation, because so much important emulation happens on the PC.
Yeah.
And high end emulation is PC gaming as far as the hardware is concerned. Mm.
And it would be lost on you. Not lost on you. It would be lost if it would be a loss if you didn't get into that, because you do have insights into those things. You know, you are just the name of your channel is like, now the little bit that I've gotten to know you, you are a tech dweeb, and I think you're always going to add value in that area.
Yeah. All tech. Mm. Actually, that was basically the original concept of my channel was whatever tech I get, I would show. Mm. And so if you look, don't look, but early in
Everyone's
my channel, I was reviewing like RGB lights. Mm. I bought some RGB lights on Amazon, so I reviewed them like these little $10 lights. I made a review of them. So it keeps it interesting for me to be able to talk about lots of different things and finding where the overlap is. I've had lots of people who found me through my PC content comment that, you know, oh, because of you, I bought a retro handheld. Mm. I never thought about them before, but you know, I watched you for your GPU review and you talked about this retro handheld and I bought it and I love it.
Yeah.
Well, what's your favorite games or whatever?
Yeah,
and then
cool.
I have people on the retro side who are like, oh, these mini PCs, I didn't know you could run PC games on them. I thought you needed a gaming PC, but you don't to play lots of these games. So there's lots of overlap with gamers, I think. Just lots of ways to play games, and we all need to open our minds a little about all the different things.
Mm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, well, from my side, I am thoroughly enjoying your content, but I'm also just impressed with your growth and all that. Like, you've clearly cottoned onto something. I mean, your growth is exceptional, and I think there was a point in my interview with Russ where I was really worried that he was thinking of leaving the space. And so I messaged him afterwards, and I can't remember what I said, but I was like, I didn't mean to say it this way. Please just keep going, you know? And
That would be a huge loss for the community if he left the space. He does a service to all of us by going into such depth and making the, especially his website is just such an amazing resource. Cause, as good as lot, like even the best of us, the videos we make, we're not making articles about them. Like Russ is treating it. He's really doing, his job as a service to the community.
Yeah.
And, his success is, it deserved, but I'm sure that he would be doing this regardless of how successful he was with it. Mm. It's just we get better content from him because he's able to do it as a living.
Mm. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah. But what I was trying to say is I feel the same with you. Like, you know, I mean, not that you've really alluded to leaving this space, but you're just doing an incredible job. You know, so you need to keep going.
Oh, thank you.
Please.
I'm hard on myself, so it's hard to take a compliment like saying that I'm growing fast or whatever, because it's never up to my own standards, and it's so easy, you know, when you're doing this YouTube thing to compare yourself to other YouTubers, to be like, oh, look at how fast they grew by 200 videos, he had this many subscribers, but why don't I have that many? Maybe I should do what he does, but there's all roads lead to Rome, as they say.
Yeah. And you know what's funny is, because we're talking about Russ, I was messaging him today, actually. And he was saying how he was at dinner with someone and he was talking about another YouTuber who was bigger than himself. And he started to get caught in that mindset of, you know, I'm kind of nowhere. What am I even doing here, you know? And there's always going to be someone ahead of you and there's always going to be someone behind you. And I've made peace with that, because there are a lot of, if someone like yourself who started about the same time as me is ahead of me, but you know, you've hit onto a thing. I could never do what you do. And so I just need to keep doing what I do, you know? I'm seeing success just at a slightly slower pace. So I just need to keep going.
It's just a problem of the human spirit to naturally want to compare ourselves to each other and look at the best outliers and say, why isn't that me? And, you know, what am I doing wrong?
Yeah.
But that's just that's a trap. You don't want to let yourself fall down there, especially in the internet world where it's so easy to find people who are doing better than you.
Yeah,
and all the time. You know, let that bring you down. Yeah, it's we're all guilty of it. But you know, we got to be mindful of these things.
Yeah. Are there any videos that you'd like to recommend before we finish the podcast, like to the viewers? I think videos of yours that you think would be good to watch.
Well, the video that I'm most proud of is this bad boy right here, the RP2S. In that one, I tell a fun little story with my little paper puppets.
Oh, yes. I was trying to place it in my mind which video that was. Yes. Mm.
Yeah, lots of people have said they've enjoyed that video, yep. And I was very proud when I made it. It's a great device. So if you're interested in what is my current favorite handheld, then definitely go check that video out. Yeah, I don't know. I've kind of started to fall into a bit of a formula with my videos, and I don't like that.
Okay,
I want to try. Always, some of the best discoveries are happy accidents. And when you fall into too rigid of a formula, you start to lose out on some of that magic.
Yes.
Another video I did that I liked was this bad boy. This was another recent video, the RGB 30. Mm. You got one of these, Aiden?
I do indeed.
Have you done a video on it yet?
I have. So... I like to do a slightly like provocative intro to my videos. And so I said, you might have seen videos of guys saying that this is one of the best devices of the year. This is not one of those videos. And so,
Shem, yes. I did watch your video. When I ask if you did one, I just need a reminder of what you actually said in it.
Okay.
Cause I watch pretty much everything everybody makes, yes. But it all kind of blends together in my mind.
Yeah. You got to place it in your brain. And so, Shem, who is one of the main guys that just sang this device's praises, he made a beautiful video. It's very successful. Yeah. You guys to go watch it. But, so he wrote there 0.00, like the timestamp on the video, shots fired.
Yeah.
But then I went on to say basically it is one of the best. But anyway, you know, I like to be.
Yeah. It's kind of funny when you're a reviewer and everybody's super positive about the thing, and then you get it and you're like, wait a second, this isn't perfect. I can't wait to point out how imperfect it is. And in the end, it's basically you still like the same stuff. The stuff that's good, you still like or whatever. But like,
I did
the same thing with the ROG Ally. There was lots I didn't like about that. In the end, it was an amazing freaking device, and it wasn't mine. I borrowed it from somebody to review it, and I was sad when I had to give it back because it was so fun. Yeah. But like, there was lots I complained about it in that video, and it's kind of. Kind of cathartic when something really, really popular and something that's gotten high praise, you get it and you can find things that you don't like about it, and it kind of feels good, I guess, to get that off your chest.
Well, I do kind of do a lot of my video off the cuff. I plan it out and then I just go for it. And so I started the video thinking I'm going to point out a lot of these flaws that I've picked up on this device, my concerns with PowerKitty and their quality. But then I end the video right at the end. I go, and then I compare this to the RetroPocket 2S, and then I look at the price and how much shipping is, and then I go, so I guess this is the best device under $100 in the world, and that's the end of the video. So I kind of convinced myself that it is actually still the best. So anyway,
Yeah. Lots of people want that. They want to know what is the answer at this price point. And so often, like, there is an answer, but it might not be the best answer for you, because so much of this stuff is personal. I've had so many devices. I'm pretty easy on devices. I tend to like most stuff. There's been devices that other reviewers have said, like, this D-pad is garbage, unusable, and then I tried and I'm like, I'm playing games on this thing. What do you mean?
It's
like
nice.
I could play Super Mario Bros. Or whatever. It's fine.
Yeah.
But some things are a deal breaker for some people. For me, the over sharpening on the RG405V mm-hmm. and the 405M, that's a deal breaker. Mm.
Yeah, I hate it.
As a pixel nerd, mm. as a graphic design snob,
yeah.
I think I was like the first one to actually point out the sharpening on the 405M.
Yeah.
I'd seen a couple of videos before mine, and I was like, and then I turned it on for the first time, and I saw that immediately. I saw it, and I was like, wait, what? I actually went back and saw rewatched some of the videos. Like, why isn't anyone talking mm. about this? And it was so obvious to me. And it didn't even like register for them. They were just, they just enjoyed the device.
Yeah.
They enjoyed the control. They played with the controls and they
didn't bother them.
Mm. I think Russ pointed out that the screen wasn't good quality. That's what
yes,
he said.
For him,
he
was
like, the screen
he was,
isn't the best
yes.
quality.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he was probably talking about the same thing I was talking about. Mm. He just worded it as the screen was not good quality,
yeah.
but I saw the sharpening because I knew immediately that sharpening was a software thing.
Mm.
Like that could be fixed
yes.
with just a simple update.
Yeah.
And, you know, Gamma OS did fix that. So
yeah.
I saw your video of Gamma OS. That was freaking awesome.
All right, cool.
I'm going to be doing that on... Yeah, I'm going to be doing that on mine as well. Actually, I have another. I got the wood version of this one. It's
yes. I'm selling.
Yeah, here it is.
Hey, God, sitting on the shelf.
Yeah, here's the wood version. Mm. Look what I did with the buttons on that. I painted them.
Oh yes, what were they? The Skittle buttons.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
I painted them.
Hmm. It looks quite nice
yeah,
in the black.
That's one thing I've been getting into. I've done it a couple times now. I painted
Ooh,
this little
that's
guy.
Nice.
I painted him orange. A little trim UI.
Oh, you're gonna have
I haven't
to,
made a video on that yet.
Have you made a video about the painting? Because that I would like to know how to do.
This has been kind of experiments
oh,
for
I
the
see.
Video to figure out the best
okay.
methods.
Cool.
Yeah, I figured out, yeah, this the trim UI didn't turn out perfect.
Okay, the color's cool.
I learned some things. Mm. Yeah, it has the right kind of vibe. It's fine. Mm. But I've done the buttons a couple times
yeah.
and I've got the perfect little
okay,
method
cool.
for them. So even the shiny Amblernick style
yeah.
buttons that they have on these things, I've figured out a good way to deal with them and
okay,
it turns
cool.
out turned out great.
Yeah, it looks great.
So I want to make a video about that one and do the Gamma OS swap. I'm thinking of a fun video where I'm like, this is a handheld for men because it's made of wood, you know? So like make it all manly video.
Well, yeah, it's quite fitting because there's a lot of tree felling in Canada.
Yeah, yeah. It's like maybe I'll film it in a workshop or something with some power tools.
Yeah, with some working men, you know, strapping young men.
Yeah, I'll have to find some men to tell me men stuff that I know, so I know what I'm talking
yeah.
about.
Yeah, that could get quite homoerotic quite quickly.
Yeah, well, yeah, it gets cold in Canada.
Oh, good times. Yeah, okay, good, man. I think we've spoken about everything apart from anything. I think we've done it.
All right. Mission accomplished.
Yes.
Well, let's do it again and pick a couple fun topics. I would absolutely love to do this anytime. And maybe we can have you on my channel sometimes.
Yeah, I'd love that. Yeah, I'm actually doing a combined live stream with Shem from RetroBreeze probably next week. We're going to celebrate both our 10,000 subscribers.
Maybe I'll crash your party
in
some way then.
Yes. I've got to learn how to use
the
whole live streaming thing because I've never done it before. So, yeah, it's going to be fun.
Oh, you'll get it.
Cool. Thanks so much, Tech Dweeb. This was great. It was really nice to chat to you.
Yeah, my pleasure. Let's do it again. And thank everybody for watching this silly ramble. And we'll see you in the next one.
Cheers.